Welcome to the Back to Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back to Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and checking on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albrader. Fred, hi, how are you this week?
Not great, Carlos. Coming to you live from the great city of Midland, Michigan in northern Michigan tonight. I'm up here visiting some family. But we have got a great show lined up for you and Carlos. Patrick Reed secured his spot on the Ryder Cup team with his win at the Barclays. Thomas Peters earned a spot on the European Ryder Cup team by winning in Denmark. Evidently, Maria's Teutonic Arms leg wasn't too bad as she collected her fifth win of the year in the annual Lydia Ko annuity tournament in Canada. And with the Charles Schwab Cup winding down, guess who's back to winning on the Champions Tour? I'll be back. Hey, we got a lot of golf to cover tonight, Carlos. Let's go.
Let's go. We have a lot to talk about. And we're going to start with the weekend backspin. And what we have to talk about, first of all, is, hey, the picks are in. And that is talking about Darren Clark's European Ryder Cup team picks, his wild cards. He had his press conference this morning, where he mentioned who were going to be his three wild cards. And as expected, it was really a no-brainer after, like you mentioned, Thomas Peters won this past Sunday. And we're going to talk a little bit more on the weekend backswing about Thomas, how he won in the main in Denmark. But definitely, it was a no-brainer that he was going to pick Lee Westwood and Martin Kaymer. But his decision was going to come down to whether he was going to have Russell Knox and or Thomas Peters. And definitely Thomas, the way that he played since the Olympics, he was finishing fourth there, just missing out on the bronze because of the great final round from Matt Kuchar. Then he just missed on winning and making the team in points 2 weeks ago at the Czech Masters, where an 18-foot putt for birdie from Paul Masterson won the tournament. But this past weekend, he played well. He played also alongside Darren Clark, and Darren Clark had a great view of him, and definitely he earned that third spot in the Ryder Cup. So, Fred, to me, it was a no-brainer. It's so sad that Russell didn't make it, because the problem with him was that he got his membership for the European Tour after he won the WGC. So those points, unfortunately for him, were not retroactively added to his points total. And that's why Russell Knox, who have been playing lights out as well, recently won also the Travelers, didn't make the team. I just find, well, Søren Jensen, I would have left him up, but he made it. That's how it goes. That's how it works. So, Fred, what's your take on Darren Clark's picks?
Well, you've got about three-fourths right, Carlos. This came down to four guys. Thomas Peters, Lee Westwood, and Martin Kaymer. And Lee Westwood and Martin Kaymer were always in. So it came down to really one pick, and Peters played his way into that. Russell Knox should be on the team. He is probably, between Peters and Knox, they're probably playing the best right now of any of the European team members. But Clark met with Russell Knox prior to the Wyndham and wanted him to play in the Wyndham to earn some more points. And he also had the opportunity to play in Denmark to earn more points. And he said, no, sorry. I'm qualified for the Barclays. I'm pretty well positioned there. I got to play in the Barclays. I want to be rested going in. And he said, thanks, but no thanks to the Wyndham. And so Clark felt a little bit of a snub there. And he felt that Knox was not taking the Ryder Cup seriously enough. And so with Peters winning, it kind of took Clark off the hook so that he could pick Peters and not give Russell Knox a second thought. So it comes down to, Carlos, that's how it kind of boils out. But I think Clark might have cut off his nose to kind of spite his face here a little bit. Like I say, Knox has been playing really well. It would have given – and we know, we talked about this before, Clark really wanted some veterans because he's got five rookies already. Adding Peters is another. And so if he'd had Knox, he had over half his team would have been rookies. And so he needed some veterans, and so that's really why he's considered and Westwood. Even though Lee Westwood hasn't been paying for crap all year, or maybe the last two or three years he's not been playing that great. So I think he made a mistake with Westwood. I think he's going to come back to haunt him. I don't know. I'll be surprised if Westwood gets a point. He might get a point if he gets paired with somebody strong in a team match, but I think he's going to get beat badly in singles. And I think this is a big sign. This is, to me, Carlos, this reminds me going back when, Curtis Strange picked Lanny Watkins to be on the team, or one of those, one way it was, yeah, Lanny Watkins picked Curtis or something, and that's where it was. And he hadn't been playing well, and that affected the whole team. I mean, they got killed. You know, they played badly. And I just think it's going to hurt them. I don't like it. I think it's a big deal for the European team, and I think they're going to get beat pretty soundly, Carlos.
I have to disagree there. To me, they're still the favorites. That thing about the underdogs and the rookies, those guys are no rookies.
They're rookies maybe right here. It's a different deal.
It doesn't matter, man. They show, and this is what I have been telling everyone ever since. The U.S. will never, ever beat Europe again until they take the Ryder Cup like their Europeans do. Never, ever. They can have a committee. They don't need. They don't need a committee. They don't need a committee. Okay. That's one of the stupidest things that I have ever seen. Making a committee for this thing. That's really stupid to me. I'm sorry, but it is. I mean, look at what happened. Darren Clark was intentionally paired with Peters last week at the Made in Denmark events in the opening round, and Thomas Peters shot a fired a 62 alongside his future captain, you know. And he said, Darren Clark said, that was one of the finest 62s I've ever witnessed. He made it look very easy. You know, those kind of things that they do, they have the key of how to do it. They want it much more than the U.S. I mean, it's not about getting along with each other and all this thing. That's not it. That's not what it is. It's how proud they are to play it. And that's why, like you mentioned, to me, Russell Knox, yeah, he should have been there in points because those points should have been retroactive for him. Unfortunately, that's the rules, but hey, maybe he didn't take it too seriously. Of course, he's been playing more in the States. His dad is from San Diego. He was in Jacksonville, and he's not that – he's from Scotland, but he's not that typical European player, right? So, but – definitely, I don't take it, you know, they do have those six rookies, but they're not rookies. They're used to playing in pressure points, and the best thing is that it's not at home. That's why I think he has no problem having six rookies at it. Whether you might think it's a disadvantage or not, no, that's when you play the best, because one of the best things that happened the last time was Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth. What did they do? Jordan Spieth just lost one, and Patrick Reed won 3-0 and won the best record of anybody else, and they were the rookies. You know, that's the type of rookies that we need more, the type of players that we need more in the U.S. Until we get some more of those type of players, like all of the Europeans are right now, I tell you, I don't see how the U.S. is going to beat. I don't know. I don't care who they're going to pick in the wild card. Which anyway, I know who each four are after watching the press conference from Davis Love on Monday. He said there are two that are sure. The other two, I'm not so sure. But hey, make no mistake about it. Okay, it's going to be Jim Furyk. It's going to be Bubba Watson. It's going to be Matt Kuchar, and it's going to be Ricky Fowler. Nobody else is going to be there. Those are going to be the four. Mark it down and set it today, August
down.
The 30th. That is
going to
be
four. You were saying Justin Thomas last week.
That's the guy I would have picked. I would have left Jim Furyk out. I would have left him out. Really. Honestly. I'm sorry he's not. I mean, you have a lot of veterans already there. You can afford to put a Justin Thomas who really has that attitude that you're looking for. Besides, Jim Furyk's record in the Ryder Cup, not that good. If you tell me that, that's a guy that has a superb record in the Ryder Cup. No, he doesn't. What is he going to bring? Yeah, the veteranship. No, you have a lot of veterans, and you need more new blood right now to start infusing for that future that the Europeans are doing right now. So you're going to see all those six, and probably Russell Knox will be in the next one. But no, I'm sorry. I just don't see it. I'm sorry.
Well, I really think Knox should be on the team. I would not have put Westwood on. I just wouldn't have done it. But I really think we are a turning point for the European team. They've gotten older. I don't think that they have the fire that they used to have. And I really don't think these rookies are going to pull it through for them, especially in singles. If it's halfway close, if they're within two or three points, the Americans are now only a couple points going into Sunday. I think they steamroll them in singles. But, we'll see. That's why they play them. And Carlos, I'm going to be there. We'll be broadcasting from up there during the week of the Ryder Cup. Well, I won't be there Tuesday night yet, but I will be up there that week, and I will have reports, and we'll be tweeting and posting pictures on Facebook and all that stuff. So we're going to be there, and we're going to talk about it the week after for sure.
That's going to be excellent. And, hey, we're going to continue now with the weekend backswing. And like you mentioned, Patrick Reed wants the Barclays, the opening leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And, Fred, I believe you have every single detail about what happened there.
Well, that's right. I think Ricky kind of succumbed to the possible fatigue and the Ryder Cup pressure on that final day. He moved up just one spot to number 11 on the Ryder Cup points list, but U.S. Ryder Cup team captain Davis Love is going to pick him anyway. If you remember, he, George Spieth, and Patrick Reed, as you mentioned, were the stars of the losing 2014 team at Glen Eagles. And even though Ricky has not been winning that much over the last 2 years, he's still been playing pretty good, and he is a fantastic match player. So, and he's well-liked in the team room as well. The players all like him. He is one of the leaders, keeps everybody loose. With him flying home from Rio to play in the Wyndham a couple weeks ago and at least making the effort trying to move into the top eight, plus playing three great rounds on Bethpage last week, should be enough for Love to pick him. J.B. Holmes in the 10th is still the question. Holmes finished T41 at Barclays and has missed three consecutive cuts coming into last week. So Cooch, Bubba, Ricky, they're the guys. So we just talked about it. Hey, speaking of Ricky and Justin Thomas, they are engaged in a mustache competition, and they're both pretty weak. May want to grow up some more before they try looking that manly. The mustaches just aren't getting it, guys. Patrick Reed had not won on tour this year, although he was having a very solid year with two runner-ups and 10 top 10 finishes, but his last top 10 came clear back at the Memorial way back in June. He was number 7 in the FedEx Cup heading into the Barclays, but this win moves him to number 1 ahead of Jason Day in the race for the $10 million. World number 1, Jason Day, was not quite on form all week, but managed to finish T4 just two shots back of Reed. He stays in second spot in the FedEx Cup race. Dustin Johnson, Adam Scott, and Jordan Spieth round out the top 5 in the FedEx Cup standings after this first event. With the win, Reed secured an automatic spot on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. He finishes 4th in the point standings and will be one of the guys Love needs to perform well at Hazeltine to get a win. Rookie Emiliano Grillo who won the first event of the 2015-2016 season way back last fall. Theprize.com was in contention all week, but couldn't quite get it done on Sunday. His 269 left him just one shot back of Reed and tied for runner-up with Sean O'Hare. That's right, I said Sean O'Hare. I didn't even know he was still playing on tour. He came into the week at number 108 in the FedEx Cup and moved all the way to number 15. O'Hare has had an up-and-down career, and this should secure a spot all the way to the tour finals at Eastlake and earn a ton of bonus pool money. Other notables, Jordan Spieth finished T10. He keeps seeing he's close, but can't quite seem to post four solid rounds. Rory is still struggling to find form. He only posted one score in the 60s all week, finished a ho-hum T31, but he ends the week at number 38 and will be in Boston this week for the Deutsche Bank. Who's out of the top 100? Well, Chad Campbell secured the final spot for the Deutsche Bank at number 100. Steve Stricker, number 97, and Vijay Singh, number 95, are still in this week, too, but will need good weeks to make it to the top 70 and qualify for the BMW Championship next week. Another old guy you just mentioned, Jim Furyk, moved up 10 spots from 94 to 84 this week. He just keeps grinding. A couple of guys that we have not talked much about this year but are in good shape in the FedEx Cup, Ricky Barnes, Patrick Rogers, Webb Simpson, and Alex Cheka are in the 70s, and with a good week could easily move on next week. Who's out? Well, Shane Lowry, Lucas Glover, Keegan Bradley, they're all gone. The USGA and the unanchored putter got the best of Keegan Bradley this year. For Glover, he's had a good year, but it is good to see him on the leaderboards again. As I mentioned, the FedEx Cup moves to TPC Boston for the Deutsche Bank Championship this week. It's a final time for this event. No announcement has been made about 2017, Carlos.
Not yet, and hopefully not. I don't think it'll be coming down to the three events. It's just not going to happen. They're going to keep those four. They'll find a sponsor somehow. But, hey, about Patrick Reed.
Boston's a big market. Somebody's going to want to be in it, I would think. Probably.
Yeah, it's just that maybe they're asking too much right now. They'll find somebody. But Patrick Reed, hey, it's going to be very hard to knock that guy down from that top spot. I mean, he's now number one, and he looks very, when he's on top of something, he's very focused. I don't know if you saw him. He already had his shoes with the flag, with the U.S. flag there. So he's in it. He's really focused, and he wants to be in that Ryder Cup. I can't wait to see him play there. If he what he did back there in Scotland, what he's going to do now in the States, I want to see his antics, and that's the kind of player I like. And we'll see. But to me, to knock him down from there is going to be tough. He's going to be playing well the rest of the playoffs, and he's got to be the man to beat for this series. Now, let's talk about the LPGA. And as you might remember, knee pain had forced 20-year-old Arya Yutanagan from Thailand to withdraw during the third round of the women's golf tournament in Rio, where the women's golf made its Olympic debut. Yutanagan was the leader after the opening round there, and she almost pulled out of this week's the $2.25 million Canadian Pacific Women's Open, but she was glad she didn't. That is because just 9 days after withdrawing, she ran away with the Canadian Pacific Women's Open on Sunday at Chili Pretty's Greens outside Calgary for her LPGA Tour leading fifth victory of the year that includes a win at the Women's British Open. Earlier in the year, Jarena Pillar was asked what she thought about Yutanagan, and she said that when she hits the ball, it just sounds different than anybody else on the tour. And this weekend, Yutanagan said that the golf course didn't suit her game because it was so narrow, so she didn't bag a driver. She didn't. No driver? No problem for long-hitting Yutanagan. I mean, she was leading by two shots heading into the final round, and she was blasting two irons and three woods off the driving holes on the three-line course. And she birdied the par 5 7th, the par 3 8th to get to 19 under, then pull away with birdies on the par 5 12th, par 4 14th, par 3 15th, and par 5 18th. In all, she posted 7 birdies and just 1 bogey en route to a 6-under 66 in cool, cloudy conditions. She finished 4 shots clear of runner-up Se-Young Kim of South Korea on the 6,622-yard Raven course. And how good was she? Well, let me tell you some stats, okay? She posted 68, 64, 67, 66. She hit 50 of 56 fairways. She hit 64 of 72 greens in regulations. Her putting average was 20.9. She was perfect in saves. And her driving distance average, 273 with 3 woods. My goodness, 27 birdies. That was a tour de force definition for her. And she just keeps going long and long, and she's going up in the Rolex rankings. South Korea's Kim, who is a 2-time winner this year, was second after 65. Her countrywoman, In Ji Sun, the 2015 U.S. Women's Open champion, was third at 18-under. Canada's Alaina Sharp had the best result of the LPGA Tour in her career, birding the 2 final holes for a 67 to finish 4th at 16-under. Australia's Carrie Webb and Sweden's Anna Nordqvist tied for 5th at 15-under. Webb won the 1999 Du Maurier Classic, then the major champion that folded because Canada's restrictions on tobacco promotions at previous greens. She was second behind Suzanne Pedersen at the course in 2009. 3-time champion Lydia Ko, she had a 69 to tie for 7th at 13-under. She won 3 of the previous 4 years, the first 2 as an amateur. Now the 19-year-old New Zealander is number 1 in the world and has 4 LPGA Tour victories this season, just behind Ariane Tanner. Canadian star and world number 3, Brooke Henderson, she shot a 69 to tie for 14th at 11-under. The 18-year-old from Smith Falls, Ontario, is already thinking about next year's tournament that is going to be in Ottawa Hunt, so that's going to be very near her home. Henderson and fellow Canadian Elena Sharp, they flew directly to Calgary from Rio, where Henderson tied for 7th and Sharp placed 30th. Both women feel optimistic about their game as they head to their $1.6 million Manulife LPGA Classic in Cambridge, Ontario, starting Thursday. Fred Dale Moore, from the home country favorites, now to the home province favorites this weekend.
Yeah, I'm kind of worried about Lydia Ko. I hope she's not too tired from carrying her Olympic silver medal around. I hear she was flashing it quite a bit there up in Canada. So,
hey, Justin was flashing it in the Barclays.
Yeah.
Hey, one last thing, Fred. I wanted to see your take on this, but I forgot to say this. I believe, you know, Aria, to me, right now, is making a strong case for player of the year. And I tell you what, right now she's got my vote. What do you think?
Yeah, oh, for sure. She's a little bit ahead of Lydia right now, for sure. The 5 wins, she got a major, so... You know, as we talked before, you got Brooke Henderson, you got Lydia Ko, and you got Aria all with majors this year. Those are the 3 best players right now on tour, although Envy Park did make a statement by winning the Olympic gold medal. It shows that when she sets her mind and she's, you know, she's motivated, she can still play pretty good. Stacey Lewis just doesn't seem quite have the closing right now for whatever reason. She's throwing in 1 bad round every week, so... yeah, those 3 young women, they're in control. Aria, she can hit that 2-iron and keep it in play and hit it farther than most of the girls can hit their drivers. So that's a real weapon. You know, if you're long and in the fairway, that's pretty good. So I'm curious. We may have a pretty good battle for the $1 million bonus this year. The race to the Sammy Globe. You know, there's going to be a bunch of tournaments yet. You know, they're going to Asia and playing, but, you know, that's kind of right in Aria's backyard. Of course, Lydia's from Korea, you know, through New Zealand, but I don't know. It's going to be pretty interesting. There's, you know, a lot of golf left on the LPGA Tour, so a lot of good stuff coming up there, Carlos.
So tell me a little bit about the birthday boy, Bernhard Langer, there at the Champions Tour. He was back. How about it?
He is back. Well, you know, it's getting close to the end of the year, and, you know, we're getting ready to decide the Charles Schwab Cup here before too much longer. So, you know, it's kind of Bernhard Langer winning time. He won a playoff over Woody Austin and Kevin Sutherland at the Bowen Classic outside of Seattle. At one point on Sunday, he was tied for 14th after not finishing lower than 13th in any tournament this year. But he ended up posting 69, 67, 67 for the three rounds and finished, you know, to tie for the playoff. A few hours later, he'd outlasted Kevin Sutherland and Woody Austin and was celebrating his fourth PGA Tour champion victory this season and 29th overall since turning 50. Langer said, "I blew tournaments when I had a lead and I've come from seven behind, so you just never know." Langer made a 3-foot birdie putt on the first hole of the playoff with Austin and Sutherland to win the Bowen Classic for the second time a day after his 59th birthday. He birdied the par 5 18th in regulation for 567, which matched Sutherland and Austin at 13 under at Snoqualmie Ridge. So they went to the playoff. Langer knocked it down there, knocked it close, chipped it on. Austin and Sutherland both found sand, and so they ended up not being able to match his birdie, and so he gets the win. Sutherland carded the best round of the day. He had an 8-under par 64 to get into the playoff. He came from way back, really made a big move. U.S. Senior Open winner Gene Sowers held the 36-hole lead by two shots and led as much as by four earlier today, but made four bogeys on the back nine and missed the playoff by a single shot. Woody Austin's runner-up moved into over $1 million for the season, which is a really good year for him. Austin said of Langer, when he, Langer, gets hot with that broom, you can't beat that broom. So Langer, with his 29 wins, ties Lee Trevino for second on the PGA Tour Champions career victory list, but still way behind Dale Irwin, who has 45 wins. The Champions Tour heads north of the border to Calgary, Alberta for the Shaw Charity Classic this week and have just six events remaining before the Charles Schwab Cup Championship in November, Carlos.
Oh, that's, like you mentioned, that's going to be Bernhard Langer time. And when I saw when he hit that approach to within 3 feet, it was just not fair, man. It's just not fair the way he's playing. The other two, no wonder they found the sand. I mean, there was nothing they could do after that. But hey, congratulations.
He is so consistent. It's just unbelievable. When he's on, man, he just does not miss a shot.
Yep, and he tied now Lee Trevino for a second most wins on the Champions Tour with 29, so, and he's still going. He's going to be second on himself not long from now. So the Bernhard Langer Tour de Force there continues. Hey, let's talk about the man of the hour, Thomas Peters. Hey, he in the Made in Denmark. He produced a brilliant finish to win his third European title at the Made in Denmark and sent a message then to Ryder Cup captain Darren Clark. The 24-year-old from Belgium, he missed out narrowly on automatic selection from the European team the weekend before. He was fourth also in the Olympics and second in the defense of his Czech Masters title the week before to force his name into the contention for one of the European captain team's three wildcards. And as we know, he made the team. He arrived there at Himmerland Golf and Spa Resort as the fourth man on tour with top five finishes in his last two events, but knowing that automatic qualification for that team, the Ludo Hessel team, in September was out of his reach. So Peters played the first two rounds intentionally with Clark and opened with a course record equaling 62 before giving a masterclass in scrambling in a level par 71 on Friday. And you would have thought at that point, he could have not done anything more to earn his place on the team for Hazelton next month. But on Sunday, Peters, he showed incredible cool under pressure, shrugging off the distraction of a 4-hour and 15-minute weather delay to almost make a hole-in-one on the 16th and put his approaches on the 17th and 18th to close range for three closing birdies and a 17-under par total. That meant that Peters birdied the last three holes in a closing 65 to finish 17 on the par, a shot ahead of overnight leader Bradley Dredge of Wales, to win the tournament and lift in his hopes of Ryder Cup selection. It was his 30th Grand Tour title in 12 months, and with that, he became the first man from Belgium to win three times on the tour. For Dretsch, it was his second runner-up finish at this event after he lost out last year to Mark Warren, and he finished a shot ahead of Adrian Oategi and David Lipsky. Sweden's Joachim Lagren, he was then at 13 under after a closing triple bogey, two shots ahead of another then Ryder Cup hopeful in German Martin Keimer, who did make the team, and South African Jacob Van Zyl. By the way, Martin Keimer played in that last final group with Thomas Peters, and he had said to Darren Clark, the way that he saw Peters play and the way that he's been playing and the consistency he's playing with and the composure, if it meant that he was going to be out of the team, take him, don't leave him out, leave me. That's how Martin Keimer thinks about how Thomas Peters is playing. And I remember, Fred, when he was playing in the Olympics in that first round, I remember texting you, telling you, hey, this guy has everything. Wow, he's amazing. He's a future star. I wouldn't be surprised that we would see him very soon, Fred, within the top five in the world. I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, the way he's collecting top tens and wins, he's doing them in bunches. So if he keeps this going, he'll get there pretty quickly. Hey, Carlos, the Web.com Tour was out in Oregon for the Winco Foods Portland Open. The final regular season event on the Web.com Tour. Man, we're winding the year down everywhere. But, excuse me, Ryan Bream from Mount Pleasant, Michigan, just up the road here a little bit from where I'm at, actually, spent time as the head coach for the Michigan State Spartans, and he has played on the McKenzie, which is the Canadian Tour, and now is a Web.com Tour champion. This was his first full year on the Web.com, and now he will become a member of the PGA Tour starting this fall. His final round, 368, got him to 15 under for the week, and he edged out Mark Anderson by one shot. The $144,000 winner's check bumped him up from number 30 to number 4. So the regular season's over. He's in the top 25. He earns his PGA Tour card. Merry Christmas. Carlos, Wesley Bryan, who won three times on the Web.com Tour this season, topped the 25 list and is already an official PGA Tour member. Highly talented rookie Ali Schneiderhan finished number 6 and will play full-time on the PGA Tour next year. Didn't we just see him as an amateur in the Open Championship or something? Man, he got that done quick. Irishman Seamus Power, who got into the Olympics due to Rory and Shane Lowry backing out, performed well, earned his 2017 PGA Tour card by finishing number 9 on the Web.com Tour. Kevin Tway, Jonathan Bird, and Casey Whitberg are a few familiar names that will need to try to earn one of the remaining 25 cards in the Web.com Tour Final Series that will begin next week at the DAP Championship at Canterbury, right in Cleveland, Ohio, before moving to Boise, Idaho, the Scarlet Cards at OSU in Columbus, and then the season finale held in Atlantic City this year, October 6th through the 9th. Big names from the PGA Tour that were outside the top 125 will need to join 75 players from the Web.com Tour in the finals include Matt Jones, Scott Stallings, Bud Cauley, Retief Goosen, Greg Chalmers, Stuart Appleby, Sam Saunders, Will McKenzie, Ken Duke, Camille Villegas, Jason Gore, Eric Compton, and Hunter Mahan. Boy, there's a guy. I think Hunter Mahan is one of the few guys that's never missed like a playoff event, right? I think so. This is the first year been out. Yeah.
That's right.
We're going to talk more about the Web.com Tour Finals next week, Carlos. I just wanted to give you a brief overview this week of, and we'll be talking about that more in depth next week, I'm sure.
And with that, we close our weekend backspin. Let's take our first short break. When we come back, we have the Par 5 news, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 News. And Fred, you get the tee shot. And you want to talk about the caddies getting their own Ryder Cup? What is that?
Yeah, they had a little event at the Mohegan Sun Golf Club in Connecticut this week, which was kind of nice. You know, they were out on Long Island, Bethpage Black, finished up the Barclays on Sunday, drive up the road a little bit to Connecticut, play a couple rounds, and then head on over to Boston for the Deutsche Bank next week. The first ever World Caddy Matches took place yesterday. It featured a one-day, two-round competition between PGA Tour caddies. It had a Ryder Cup format with American caddies like Ted Scott, who carries Bubba Watson's bag, and Damon Green, who's on Zach Johnson's bag, taking on their international counterparts. Joe LaCava, a longtime caddy for Fred Couples, and lately for Tiger Woods, was a non-playing vice captain for the U.S. squad, which was captained by Steve Kalka, who the chairman of the Professional Tour Caddies Association and carries for Brian Davis. Fluff Cowan, who caddies for Jim Furyk now, was also a captain for the U.S. squad. Caddies for Justin Rose, Mark Fulcher, and Henrik Stenson, Gareth Lord, led the international team. Some of the caddies are excellent golfers in their own right. Zach Johnson's caddy Damon Green, for example, has won over 70 mini-tour events. He fell short of his PGA Tour card in 1994 by missing a 2.5-foot putt at Q School, and has competed in the U.S. Senior Open several different times. The event raised money for Canines for Warriors, a nonprofit organization that provides service dogs to military veterans. And a few of the pros actually showed up to root on their caddy. The competing caddies were divided into foursomes drawn at random during a pre-match party. The tournament used a modified alternate shot format in the morning, followed by a singles play in the afternoon. I don't know if this was any precursor to the actual Ryder Cup, Carlos, that will be held in just 1 month. Yeah, we're just a month away, by the way, at Hazeltine near Minneapolis. But the U.S. team won the internationals 26-7. Ouch.
I'm telling you, the Europeans have it. They know what it is to win. They know what it is to win. We are so far.
Out of your mind. I think you're entering senility.
Well, we'll see. That's what happens, but we'll see. I'm so sure about this one. Hey, let me tell you about something about the TPC Kuala Lumpur, the KL, the new rebranded name for the Kuala Lumpur Golf and Country Club, the KLGCC. So they have acquired the licensee rights of Southeast Asia's first golf facility to join the PGA Tour's Tournament Players Club, the TPC Network. TPC-KL, how it's going to be known, the country's most adorned golf course and managed by Simi Darby Property, is given the rights for 5 years with a 5-year extension option. Simi Darby Property Managing Director Datuk Ir Jahwari Hamidi said the agreement with the PGA Tour is a recognition of TPC-KL's tournament-grade golf courses, world-class facilities and services, as well as commitment to excellence, and with that relationship, they aspire to elevate TPC-KL's status further as the number one golf club in Southeast Asia. The renaming to TPC-KL event was graced by Raja Permaisuri Agong Tuanku Hamina Hamudin. My goodness, these names. Fred, that's why I have to take it, right?
Take a deep breath.
Yeah. See, the things that I have to do for Fred, I have to take these notes. But anyway, Jauhari.
You're doing not me, buddy. I'm with you here.
Jauhari, who is and said that Simi Darby Property aims to go beyond the excellence in operations, club management, human capital development, food and beverage, and leisure management services, and to position TPC-KL as the paradise for golfing and leisure in the region. Many of the highly acclaimed golf courses affiliated with the PGA Tour are in the U.S. The inclusion of TPC-KL would boost the stature of the country in the golfing sphere. Jauhari said, as the home of this CIMB Classic, TPCKL is Southeast Asia's first TPC branded facility to ever host an official PGA Tour event. The renaming of the KLGCC to TPCKL is part of the Simit Arby Properties rebranding of the resort to Alia KL. Alia KL will be the company's key development, which will see the 61-acre land near Bukit Kiara transform into luxurious and iconic structures. TPCKL, which is a 36-hole tournament standard course, hosted major golf tournaments, including the Simit Arby LPGA and the LPGA Malaysia, and the European Tourist Malaysian Open. Members of the TPC Kuala Lumpur enjoy now additional access to 34 clubs, including the renowned TPC Sawgrass, PGA West, and TPC Harding Park. Deputy Commissioner of the PGA Tour, Jay Monahan, said that the TPCKL has distinguished itself as an outstanding host for the annual CIMB Classic and are excited that the TPCKL can serve as a catalyst for more TPCs to emerge in Asia with the rapidly growing number of Asian golfers. Fred, I think this is a good move by the PGA Tour, who had been silent to the moves of the European Tour, who already have a massive advantage in Asia, which is the current frontier being targeted in the golf industry.
Well, you know, you and I have been talking for some time that it's hard to get the PGA Tour players to even play outside the United States. The new WGC tournament that left Doral will be going to Mexico. The guys were not excited about going down to Brazil for the Olympics. It's like pulling teeth to go over to the WGC, the HSBC, over in Singapore. So, they're not venturing over to the European Tour. You know, they used to go play some European Tour events. You know, every year some guys would go over. Nobody's going over anymore. And they might play in the Scottish Open a little bit. They might play, a couple guys go to the Irish Open because Rory asked them over. But guys are not traveling outside the country right now. There's so much money in the U.S., they can't afford to leave here and go play someplace else, even to spread their name or their brand out. So, you know, the PGA Tour's got to stretch out, Carlos. You and I have talked about it. They got to get out there. So maybe this is a way to do it. Hey, let's talk a little bit of amateur golf. Maverick McNealy is the winner of the Mark H. McCormick Medal as the leading male player in the 2016 World Amateur Golf Ranking. And Duke University's Leona McGuire from Ireland won the Female McCormick Award. McNealy is a standout, of course, on the Stanford golf team, and he said, "To win the McCormick Medal is both very special and a huge honor. Amateurism is something that is very important to me, and I really appreciate all the USGA and the RMA do to promote and support amateur game at all levels. It's very humbling to join the list of previous winners, as well as this year's winner, Leona McGuire, all of whom have reached the pinnacle of amateur golf. I hope that I can represent this award as well as it has been represented over the past 9 years." And we've already talked about McNealy in the past, has said that he may not turn pro. He's been weighing his options. He's got, I think he's in his last year at Stanford yet. So he's not sure what he's going to do. It also helps that his dad is the president and owner of a tech company out there in the tech world out there in California. So I don't think he's hurting for money. He could probably make more working for his dad than he can playing pro golf. A first team All-American, McNealy won 4 collegiate events in 2016 and made the cut at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, his only PGA Tour start of the year. In 4 career PGA Tour starts, McNealy has made the cut in 3 of them. He's just 20 years old. He was named the Pac-12 Conference Player of the Year for the second consecutive year, one of only 6 golfers, who include Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, to do that. McNealy's 4 wins came at the Western Intercollegiate, where he shot a tournament record, the lowest ever by a Stanford golfer. The Gifford Collegiate, the U.S. Collegiate, and the Illini Invitational. His 69.57 stroke average was the second best in the nation, and he was named a Ben Hogan Award finalist for the second year in a row. He's tied with Patrick Rogers for the second most career wins at Stanford with 10, one behind Tiger Woods, who has 11. McNealy helped the 2015 U.S. Walker Cup team beat GB&I. He won two matches at the 2015 Arnold Palmer Cup and a number of other titles, including the Pac-12 Championship, where his final round 61, Carlos, tied the 18-hole record held by Woods and Cameron Wilson. The prestige at PGA West, the NCAA Chapel Hill Regional, and the Northern California Amateur Bowl. He wins a lot of stuff. Let's just say he wins a lot. He was a recipient of the Nicklaus Award and the Hassan's Award in 2015 and led the nation with the second best scoring average in NCAA history, 69.05. As a winner of the Mark H. McCormick Medal, McNeely receives an exemption to the 2017 U.S. Open at Erin Hills and the 146th Open at Royal Birkdale, as long as he remains an amateur, so I'm sure you will want to play in those. This award, named after Mark McCormick, of course, who's founded, along with Arnold Palmer, the sports marketing company, IMG, and was a great supporter of amateur golf. Past winners include Colton Knost, Danny Lee, Nick Taylor, Peter Uihlein, Patrick Cantlay, Chris Williams, Matthew Fitzpatrick, there's your guy, Ali Schneiderhaus, and John Rahm. So, Leona McGuire was named the award winner last week. She's from Ireland. She goes to Duke, and she leads the Women's World Amateur Golf Ranking. Let's see here. She has won a bunch of stuff also. She has a twin sister who is also a top golfer. After a couple of wins, she took over the number one ranking in 2015 and has held it ever since. She won the ACC Conference Individual title and three other leading amateur events last year. So she's already announced after the Olympics here, she's turning pro, so we will see her in the LPGA Q school in October and possibly out on the LPGA Tour next year, Carlos.
And with that, we're going to end up our Par 5 news. We're going to take a short break.
Wait a minute. You got to talk about, you didn't talk about the PGA Tour 3 hours of the Tour Championship. Johnny Miller and all that.
I didn't. Oh, my goodness. So sorry about that. So sorry about that. I have a problem because my notes got lost. I apologize. I'm trying to go through emotions here. So I'm trying to build everything back up. But, hey, yes, it's true. You know, the East Lake Golf Club is the permanent site of the Tour Championship since 2004 and has received an extension to host the tournament through 2020. The PGA Tour made the announcement last Wednesday, along with news that the final day of the tournament will be aired with extremely limited commercial interruption thanks to a new proud partner arrangement between Coca-Cola and the Southern Company. All but 4 minutes of the final 3 hours of the NBC's broadcast on Sunday will be commercial-free. When the final twosome makes the turn on the last day, all commercials will cease. PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham said, and I quote, "Once the last three or four groups reach the 10th hole, you won't have another advertisement, which means you can really tell the story," end of quote. You know, it gives the Tour Championship a chance to build a drama on the final holes, which is expected to intensify now that organizers have flipped the nines. Instead of finishing on a long, difficult par 3, players will complete play on a par 5 hole that offers a chance to make a birdie. So it's not going to be over until that final hole. Fincham said his dream scenario on Sunday afternoon will be a close finish that results in a playoff. The Tour Championship has been decided by a playoff 3 times at Eastlake, 1998 with Hal Sutton, 2008 with Camilo Villegas, and 2011 with Bill Haas. The limited commercial arrangement was made possible by Coke and the Southern Company agreeing to share the branding on the promotions and marketing, as well as the broadcast leaderboards and vignettes. Coca-Cola was the presenting sponsor of the Tour Championship from 2001 to 2010 and has been the title sponsor since 2011. Southern Company joins with Coke as proud sponsor, similar to the model that is used at the Players' Championship front.
Yeah, I can see the staff meetings right now. You know, we're going to get more Johnny Miller. That's really good stuff. You know, more Johnny. I'm not sure that's a good thing, but can you hear the staff meeting right now? When am I going to get a potty break? You know, Johnny's 67. You know he has to make some regular trips to the men's room. So, you know, we're throwing it back to you, Roger. You take it, buddy. I'm on break here. So, yeah, that's gonna be interesting. Hey, Carlos, for my last story here in the Park 5 News tonight, let's talk about Robert Allenby. You know, we always like to talk about Robert. He's such an interesting character. Prosecutors dropped their case against the Australian golfer after officials from the casino he was arrested in and a security guard both declined to press charges. That was convenient. We have decided not to proceed with charges against them, the Rock Island County, Illinois state attorney announced. Allenby was facing counts of disorderly conduct and criminal trespass after police were called to Rock Island's Jumer Casino in Illinois at 2:29 in the morning. My mother always told me, Carlos, nothing good ever happens after midnight. I've tried to live by that. Robert should heed that. He had missed the cut in the John Deere Classic. Evidently, he was drowning his sorrows and losing a few bucks at the tables. Allenby was arrested inside the casino after Illinois Gaming Board agents called for police assistance when it got loud and confrontational with security at the casino. Allenby told USA Today he had dinner and played blackjack with other golfers and caddies at casino tables. Nothing wrong here, just having a little fun. He was taken to a local jail, and then police took him back to the casino after the bus. This is the second brush with authorities in the last year. Allenby made world headlines last year in Hawaii when, after missing the cut in the Sony Open, claimed he was robbed, kidnapped, and beaten outside a Honolulu wine bar. That was fun. Allenby told USA Today, nothing happened about the Illinois arrest. It's all over. Nothing to see here. Let's move along. So, Carlos, it appears that the Aussie may have a bit of a drinking and gambling problem, and when confronted by local security, takes offense at his revelry being disturbed. It has been an extremely tough year for Allenby. In 23 starts this season, he has missed 21 cuts. He's missed the cut. He missed the cut 2 weeks ago at the Wyndham. That was the end of the season. I'm sure he's glad it's over. He can go down to Australia, try and make a few bucks down there because he ain't making any more in the U.S. unless he's going to play in some fall tournaments. I don't know. I don't even know if he's keeping his card. He's got maybe has former champion status he can use. I'm not sure. So anyhow, I hope he can get things sorted out. He's been a solid player for a long time. So good luck to him, and I hope it goes well for him.
Yeah, wishing him all but the best. At the end of the day, talking about a human being here, hope he can rectify and become a very interesting player like he was before all this. Now, for sure, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have our VIG, very important guest of the week. Her name is Amy Lillibridge, the Director of Alumni and Annual Giving for Evans Scholars. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. Her name is Amy Lillibridge. She's the Director of Alumni and Annual Giving for Evans Scholars. She's a former Evans Scholars herself and has worked in her current position for 7 years. Evans Scholars is overseen by Western Golf Association out of Chicago and awards full-ride college scholarships to former caddies who want to attend college but need financial assistance. Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview that we're going to listen to from you to Amy Lillibridge.
Yeah, I met Amy last year, and I was so impressed with her story. I wrote a piece that was in the NWO Golf Links some time back about how she got involved with golf and worked her way as a caddy and became an Evans Scholar. Got a four-year scholarship to Miami University. Caddied on the LPGA Tour in the summer times and has worked her way up through the business world and everything through golf. It's really a great story. But, yeah, Evans Scholars is a wonderful program for young people to become involved. Teaches kids kids work ethic, how to deal with adults, and helps them prepare for their future. So in this piece, Amy talks about Evans increasing the number of students on scholarship in the U.S. to 935 this year from 910 last year. And they have a goal of reaching 1,000 kids on scholarship by 2020. And that takes a lot of money, Carlos. So go ahead and play. Go ahead and run the tape, if you would, please.
Thanks, Lance.
We are here at the Toledo Country Club with the annual Evans Scholars outing. And we're talking with Amy Lillibridge, who is with the Western Golf Association, the Evans Scholars Foundation. And your title is?
Director of Annual Giving and Alumni Relations.
So that means you go out and twist guys' arms to get in their pocketbook a little bit.
That's a fancy title for that, yes.
Amy, you've been with Evans Scholars for about 7 years, I believe.
That's correct, and very fortunate that I am also an Evans Scholar alum, and so it's great to be working at a foundation that I am so passionate about myself.
I think we've talked in the past, and last school year, Evans Scholars had 910 students in schools around the United States under full scholarship, and in 2016-2017 school year, you've upped that to 935.
Yes, we've been very fortunate through the support of our PAR Club members across the country and events like today that we're headed in the right direction and we're growing the program. 935 in school this fall at 20 different universities across the country with a plan to grow the program to have 1,000 scholars in school by the year 2020. It's been a really exciting time for us.
So one of the purposes of this outing here today is to raise money and raise the awareness with alumni and with supporters of Evans Scholars that you need those contributions. What does it take to keep 935 kids in school today?
We have a tuition bill of $17.6 million annually, and that number just keeps going up, obviously, with the increase in scholarships, but also college tuition. As everyone knows, it's continuing to rise. So, again, that's where the support of our donors really becomes important.
You were telling me also today that you're building some new houses. You're going into some schools that you haven't been in before. I think maybe Penn State, maybe Kansas. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're very excited. We've had scholars in the past, in fact, had a scholarship chapter at the University of Kansas back about 30 years ago, and unfortunately caddy programs in Kansas are not as strong as they used to be, but we've been able to revive that and revive a partnership with the University of Kansas. So we have 11 Evans Scholars in school at the University of Kansas this year, with plans to hopefully have a scholarship house back there again in the next few years. Penn State as well. We've really had great opportunity to grow the program in the East and in states like Pennsylvania, New York, Massachusetts, and all the way down into D.C., Maryland. And we're seeing some nice success there and are excited to be at Penn State and really see that as kind of a gateway for the program to the East Coast.
Amy, you're a young woman and found out early that you liked the game of golf. You got introduced to it by your father. You became a caddy. Not a traditional young woman's type job, but you found a lot of success doing different jobs in golf, and it all stemmed from being a caddy and being an Evans Scholar and coming up through the program.
Caddying is really what solidified my interest in the sport and really got me hooked. I was very fortunate to spend so many years caddying for the great members out at the Inverness Club, and the club was so great to me, and the scholarship was certainly a tremendous gift. And I've worked hard to try to stay involved in the game and also give back to a sport and a program that's been so wonderful to me.
And along that vein, you've actually started a program, Evans Scholars has a program going in Chicago that focuses on young women and getting them involved.
We have. This was our fifth summer for our WGA Caddy Academy program. And we found that one of the biggest challenges in getting girls involved in caddying is geography and gender. Only 2% of caddies nationwide are young women. So we've tried to change that through our Caddy Academy. It's a high school program designed for high school girls entering their sophomore year of high school. They come from all across the country. I believe we had 11 states represented in this year's contingent of 80 young women that participate in this program in Chicago. So we literally bring everyone to Chicago each summer for a 7-week program, teach them how to caddy. Most of the girls have never been on a golf course before, so do both in-class, on-course training with the girls, and the hope being that they return for 3 summers and then are eligible to apply for the Evans Scholarship. But it's been a really impactful program. We have 17 young women in school right now that are graduates of the Caddy Academy and are looking to continue to grow that program. All of these young women entering the program, the average GPA is 3.8. The average household income is right around $25,000. So the need is there. They're bright girls, and we're really excited to be able to introduce them to the game of golf and caddying and also hopefully help them through college.
So we want our listeners to understand this program is open to any young person. If you have a club in your area that has a caddy program and supports the Evans Scholars, your child can become a caddy if they have the grades, if they have the economic need, and if your club has a program, you could possibly earn a full scholarship, tuition, room, board, everything at a state-funded school.
That's correct. And if you don't live near a club, there's opportunities through programs like the Caddy Academy to be able to caddy at. So, yes, we're trying to break down those geographical barriers, and it's truly an amazing job for a young person to be able to build relationships on the golf course, interact with adults. Just the skills that you learn caddying really help you along the rest of your life.
And you're on a good work ethic, and that falls over. You mentioned GPA a minute ago, and I know in the meeting tonight it was recognized that Ohio State was one of the top GPAs in the nation. The Ohio State House, that has 72 Evans Scholars in it, had a GPA of what for 2015-2016?
Average GPA in the House was 3.54 across the board, and Ohio State won our annual scholarship trophy, the James E. Moore Scholarship Trophy, which is awarded to the chapter with the highest combined GPA. They tied Northwestern at 3.54, so they're sharing that scholarship trophy this year.
So for our listeners, if you have an Evans Scholars program in your area or want to get one going, contact Amy Lillibridge in the Western Golf Association's offices. Evans Scholars Foundation is located there. They oversee the program. Your email is?
Lillibridge, L-I-L-L-I, bridge, at WGAESF.org.
The website is WGAESF.org also. Log on, take a look at it. It's a great, great program. We support the Evans Scholars 100%. And Amy, you're a wonderful story for coming through it. Just good luck to you going forward.
Thank you so much, Fred. Thanks for your support of the program.
There you have it. That was Amy Lillibridge, the Director of Alumni and Annual Giving for Evans Scholars. And you know, one thing that I had read about this is that you can call it maybe the Caddyshack Scholarship, because Bill Murray, We all know him played the deranged greenkeeper with Gopher Fixation in that 1980 cult classic. And his brother, Brian Doyle Murray, who wrote that script, were among six brothers who grew up caddying at the Indian Hill Club in Winnetka, Illinois. And their eldest brother's effort to land an Evans scholarship provided the inspiration for that Danny Noonan character, according to the brother Andy, who co-owns the Murray's Brothers Caddy Shack restaurant. So, but that's this is a great program. I mean, even though you know that golf has gone down from that 30.6 million pre-Tiger down to now to about 25 million people, the scholars, the Evan Scholarship is stronger than ever, and they have helped over 10,600 youngsters since its inception in 1930. So, Fred, this is a great, great way to motivate those kids that have no resources to really pull forward and complete a college career.
Yeah, a couple things here, Carlos. Number one, caddies learn a tremendous amount. It is a great educational program, just being a caddy. As I mentioned earlier, they learn the work ethic. They learn to deal with adults on the golf course. It's just a really great educational thing. Second, the standards that these kids maintain while they're in school is phenomenal. They have over a 96% graduation rate. They maintain, you know, 3-point-something grade averages. Because they live in Evans Scholars houses around the various campuses, they have a support system. All the kids kind of help each other. So the older kids can tutor the younger kids as they come in and kind of help them around a little bit. So, you know, it's kind of like a family. And then the third thing from this, Carlos, is it's kind of a pay-it-forward kind of a thing. Because they get these scholarships and they get their college education basically for no cost, when they get out and start making money, they are willing to turn some of their income back to Evans Scholars to help future caddies get their education. And that's where this $17.6 million that it takes to peak 935 kids in college every year, that's where the most of the money comes from. Yeah, there's other corporate sponsors and other things, but the alumni do a great job of keeping the program going and keeping it funded. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing, Carlos. I can't talk about it enough. I tell everybody about it, and I hope the listeners got something out of our little chat with Amy tonight.
And for more information on this, you can go to www.wgaesf.com. I repeat, www.wgaesf.org. So there you have it. Now, Fred, let's take one more short break. And when we come back, we have the practice range where we're going to be talking about the PGA Tour and the R&A. They're going to be working on simplifying the rules of golf with the hopes of growing the game. We have everything about it, don't we?
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range, where every week, sorry about that, Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us take our own shot at it. And this week, you know, there were news about something about the R&A and the PGA Tour. They have agreed on working towards simplifying the rules of golf, all this with the hopes of growing the game. One thing I'm getting tired of listening now, everybody's using the growing the game. Now the Olympics were a success, and now everybody wants to grow the game. Look, use the Olympics. But this thing, I don't know. Fred, what's your take on this? I'll let you know my take afterwards. So what's your take on it?
Well, Carlos, I'm going to kind of be more like a rant, okay? We didn't get a chance to talk about this before.
No, I wanted to rant. I wanted to rant.
Well, I'm going to rant.
Okay, go ahead. Do it.
So, basically the news is that the USGA and the RNA are working to simplify the rules. Well, they're always doing that, Carlos. That's not big news. That's their job. They're doing it all the time. So, you know, this is like a PR thing, okay? With their latest USGA gaffes this season, prompted this announcement. You and I both know that the rules are way too complicated. So, is this a good thing or a bad thing? Okay, so here I go. This is a total sham, and they're only trying to appease a golf public that is questioning both ruling bodies, and that's the USGA and the RNA, for the way they have botched rulings in the majors this year. Just the decisions booklet for the rules of golf, a book that is supposed to simplify and make the rules understandable, is 600 pages, Carlos. It just makes the rules even more confusing if you try and read it. The USGA and the RNA have been taking their lumps in the golf media over the past couple of years. There was the anchored putter controversy. You know, there's something. Let's really stir something up. You know, there's a Grow the Game initiative right there. When they ruled that long putters and belly putters did not conform to the rules of golf and banned them, for a reference to what effect that ruling has had on some golfers, see Keegan Bradley's world ranking. He's heading south in a hurry since he's had to learn a new putting style. It seemed at the time, and still does, that the ruling bodies overreacted to the long putters when Ernie Els, Keegan Bradley, and Adam Scott won majors using the anchored stroke. Then we have the Dustin Johnson situation with the USGA's ill-fated ruling and timing of informing Johnson of his possible stroke penalty for causing the ball to move on the green at Oakmont. Greens that more resembled pool tables. Maybe they should add side pockets to catch balls rolling off the slick greens. Then we had problems at the U.S. Women's Open, and it seems like a rules flap is involved with every professional golf tournament. The announcers are fed up, the fans are fed up, and the players are really fed up with too many rules and seemingly incongruous rulings. Super slow-mo cameras also seem to be a problem. What is too much? Well, the powers that be, the USGA and the RNA, have announced they're going to relook at the complexity of golf rules and take steps to simplify them. Write this down, Carlin. Carlos, never gonna happen. Both bodies constantly pore over the rules of golf, and if something could have been done, it would have been done a long time ago. These guys all got to justify their job. They all got to have their say. So because of modern technology, makes the golf ball go farther and straighter, and more physically fit golfers hit the ball at incredible distances, the USGA and the RNA feel they need to make golf courses more difficult to shoot low scores. That means faster greens, deeper rough, thicker sand, etc. This is where the problem comes in. That was the whole problem with the Dustin Johnson fiasco at Oakmont. Those greens were never meant to be at 15 on a centimeter. Jack Nicklaus said as much in May, a full month before the U.S. Open was contested. But I digress. Just digress. Once you change a minor rule, it leads to another and another. I talked with USGA rules official just yesterday, Carlos, and asked him about, you know, I asked him this very question. He said they constantly study ways to revise the rules. But the problem is that changing one section affects another section, and it goes on and on. It's like pulling a thread on a sweater. Where does it end? Besides, as I mentioned earlier, the USGA and the RNA owe their very existence to the creation and maintenance of the rules of golf. If they make them too understandable, they may run themselves right out of business. There is a giant and I do this all in caps, giant need for golf rules revisions. You know, I just thought about it when I was doing this, but in one drive, this is a couple of years ago, where they had the simplified golf rules, and there was just like 8 or 9 of them, you know, so it just keeps play moving. And for guys who are just having a good time, you know, there's just simple rules. That's what we need right there. But the RNA and the USGA are not organizations to do it. Average players, the PGA, the PGA Tour, the LPGA, and others must be consulted as well. Golf should be a game for everyone. Right now, I don't see the stuffy, blue blazer, khaki pants crowd giving up the reins anytime soon, Carlos.
I mean, I have to agree. I mean, it's not going to happen. And I don't know really what really brings me to this is that they say this is because of to grow the game. I don't think that players are sitting on the sidelines because and not playing more golf because the rules are too hard to understand. It's just that the game itself is boring to them. It's too long. It takes too much to understand it. It's too much to learn it, and we have to simplify the games for the people who are learning. How about changing the rules for the beginners so that we can make it easier? We make different kind. I know that you have the handicaps and all this, but you're still playing the same game. Let's change the game for those beginners as people like and enjoy more of the game and take it more seriously. They'll start going to a real, actual big rules that are now in place. I think we should make it easier for people to really come and play the game rather than trying to see if we can simplify 600 pages of golf rules, or maybe instead of 7 ways to drop the ball, we can change it to 2 maybe, you know, instead of 7 or things like that. But I don't know.
What's the yellow stick? What's the white line? You know, all that stuff.
I remember what you said about the relaxed rules of golf that the Golf Channel said. You know, the maximum score is double par. Penalties are all one stroke. You know, all this common things. And the last thing that one said, the number 7, was use common sense. Something that has never been applied here. And I remember what happened this weekend with Rory McIlroy. And Daniel Summerhays said he said it and the mics pick it up there when Rory thought his ball had moved on the green. And he said, oh, the USGA has messed this all up. And you can just laugh. I mean, it's true. I mean, they're just trying, like you say, this is just a peer move. They're just playing out to the crowd, trying to please them. But that's not the way to do it. Everybody's still going at them. Try to simplify the game, not the rules. I mean, make it easier for people to come in and really play the game better, enjoyable to them. And you'll see how really the game is going to grow for it.
Yeah, Carlos, I think we're on the same page here. I just don't see the USGA and the RNA simplifying the rules of golf anytime soon. They may say they're doing it, but it's just not in their DNA. They don't understand. They're on a different planet than the average golfer, Carlos.
Yeah, but like you said, I mean, otherwise they'll be out of business. Then who's going to be ruling? They'll be out of business. Hey, Fred, let's talk a little bit now, or let's take our final putts. Let me start by saying that, you know, there was no doubt that Patrick Reed desperately, he wanted to make the U.S. Ryder Cup team. It's evidenced by the American flag tie he wore last Tuesday during the closing bell ceremony of the New York Stock Exchange. However, he showed that he needed to work on his touch to make the team and win the tournament because he may have used a little too much power with the gavel to signal the day's end. So, I mean, his face when it happened, he broke it. The head went flying. And his face when it happened was priceless. When the head of the gavel went off, the table looked like an approach bouncing off the green, and he opened his mouth like, whoa, what happened here? All that was missing there was the shout of four, watch out. But apparently it served him well because as he was money around the greens during the weekend and won the Barclays and earned the automatic Ryder Cup. So, but that was just a funny thing happening there last Tuesday. Also, we still don't know officially if Ricky Fowler, officially, that's why I say we don't know if officially Ricky Fowler will be in the Ryder Cup. He will. But anyway, but fresh off his gig as America's man about the Olympics in Rio, Fowler will have another shot at representing the Stars and Stripes, this time down under. Fowler will compete for the United States at November's World Cup of Golf, replacing his pal Bubba Watson as the top-ranked American. Watson opted to withdraw for scheduling and personal reasons from the event, which will be contested at Kingston Heath Golf Club in the famed Sandbelt region of suburban Melbourne, Australia. Fowler selected Jimmy Walker, the reigning PGA champion, and another of his homies to be his partner in the two-man team event. Fowler and Walker have previously partnered in the 2014 Ryder Cup and the 2015 President's Cup, compiling a combined 1-2-3 record in those outings. And finally, Stacey Lewis had not been home much this summer from playing and planning a wedding, but the Houston native had the perfect place to get ready for the Olympics. She's among tour players who now are members of the Blue Jack National, the first U.S. course designed by Tiger Woods. Lewis said she became a member through relationships with Steve Elkington and her husband, Gerard Caldwell, knew the developers. Lewis tied for fourth, missing a playoff for the bronze in the Olympics, but she used it as a practice there. She figures that this will also help her going forward, which is why she prefers to practice at Blue Jack, even though it's a 45-minute drive from her house, because according to her, and I quote, "It's a place where you can spend all day there. They have a back practice greens, and if you want it super fast for a tournament, we'll do that for you. They've been very accommodating," end of quote. Fred, that's a nice endorsement there for a Blue Jack.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a pretty nice place. From what I've heard, it has shades of Augusta National running through it. Tiger did a pretty good job with it. Spent a bunch of money, but pretty nice place. You know, I don't know if you saw any of the hijinks with Jordan Spieth hitting marshmallows into Jimmy Fallon's mouth last week. Since Jordan wasn't at the Olympics, he had some time to visit Fallon's late-night TV show and performed a few trick shots with marshmallows. That's really nice. I guess if you want to see him, you can find replays on YouTube if you got nothing better to do. You might want to spend a little more time on the putting green. Maybe that'll help him more than hitting some marshmallows. I'm not sure. Paul Latschow received the Old Tom Morris Award from the Golf Course Superintendent Associate of America. Latschow, who prepared golf courses for 9 major championships over 38 years as a golf course superintendent, he elevated the profession through his influence and innovation. So, the award has been presented annually since 1983 to an individual who, through a lifetime commitment to the game of golf, has helped to mold the welfare of the game in a manner and style exemplified by Old Tom Morris. So I wanted to touch base here. Yeah, during his long career, Latschow worked at Oakmont, Augusta National, Wilmington Delaware Country Club, Congressional Country Club, Riviera Country Club, and Wingfoot. Those are some names on a resume right there, Carlos. Can you imagine that? Those are some of the greatest courses ever in the United States. Some of his innovations included rolling greens for firmness, using fans to deliver air circulation and cool greens in the summer, cutting fairway approach areas with walking mowers and recruiting volunteers to help with the workload at major championships. By the way, Latschow's son is the head superintendent at Muirfield Village, home of Jack Nicklaus's Memorial Tournament. Bad news out of California. The severe drought is having a negative effect on golf courses throughout the state. This summer alone, California has lost 2 peat dye designs. They've lost an Arnold Palmer design course east of L.A. There's a course that hosts the web.com tour, the Roddy Ranch Golf Club, in the Bay Area. The Coachella Valley, which includes Palm Springs, La Quinta, and other popular snowboard getaways in the southern South California desert, has not had that much problem, although they use a tremendous amount of water down there. Their water costs are really high. So, you know, California is having some real water problems down there, Carlos. And, Carlos, that is all I have for August the 30th. We're going to be turning the calendar on to September here real quick. We got the FedEx Cup playoffs. We got the Web.com Tour Finals. We got the Charles Schwab coming up. We're down. We're going over to Asia. We're going to play some golf tournaments over there for the LPGA Tour for a while before they have the final race of San Diego. We got a lot happening over the next couple. Oh. And let's not forget, there's that little thing called the Ryder Cup. 30 days from now, Carlos.
I can't wait. Can't wait for it. The Europe is going to win, unfortunately. Well, we'll see. Anyway, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Niner Report presented by eDrive.com. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Amy Lillibridge, the Director of Alumni and Annual Giving for Evans Scholars. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, hey, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Backtime Report. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.